Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this happy ceremony. And may I acknowledge our distinguished guests, in addition to the President and the First Lady, Neil Armstrong, who I will be introducing in just a moment, and his wife, Carol, who is next to the First Lady, and Edwin Buzz Aldrin, and his wife, Lois, who is also in the front row, and astronaut Michael Collins, and we want to send our special regards to his wife, Pat, who was whose knees were injured in a fall, not too serious, but we want her to know that we're thinking of her today. The President's advisor for science and technology and space, Jack Gibbons, who is here, and the director of NASA, Dan Golden, who is here, and all of the members of the House and Senate who are present, and I hope that they will forgive me for not acknowledging each one individually. To the students who, is that okay? Is that? May I make one exception and introduce our astronaut, Senator John Glenn, who is here? And the young people who are here, we welcome you. And may I also acknowledge and ask to stand as a group with their spouses, the Apollo astronauts who are present gathered for this event. Could you all stand with your spouses? I'm going to introduce Mr. Armstrong and then introduce the President. Let me say, first of all, back in the 1930s, Helen Keller, who extended human frontiers herself, was told of the Empire State Building, and marveling at its height and the spirit of those who dared to build it, she wrote the following words: "Imagination creates distances and horizons that reach for the end of the world. It is as easy for the mind to think in stars as in cobblestones." Today we meet to commemorate the daring, brilliance, dedication, and imagination of those who looked beyond the end of our world and taught an entire generation to think in stars. It was 25 years ago that the person I introduce radioed back, "Houston, Tranquility Base here, the Eagle has landed." In a year that saw America divided over so many things, this was an event that brought together not only all Americans, but all human beings. In just a few moments, the President of the United States will talk about what that has meant for our country and the world. You'll notice many children who are here, whether high school students taking part in a space design contest, or junior high students working in math and science programs, or students from countries around the world. What could be more appropriate? For Apollo's landing was what lifted the eyes of a generation of young people above the cobblestones and made millions of children want to explore this last frontier. May I also note that we have with us as well Sergei Krikalev, who is the Soviet cosmonaut, the Russian cosmonaut, who just earlier this year flew on the space shuttle. And please stand, would you please, Sergei? This, too, is fitting. As my slip of the tongue there illustrated, our space program originated in the hostility and mistrust of the Cold War. But when Russian cosmonauts board the space station and work together with astronauts from the United States and many other countries, the world will see one of the most powerful symbols of this new age of cooperation. And it is also important to note that this cooperation in space gained tremendous momentum from the astronauts and cosmonauts themselves, who joined hands in space in an earlier decade. And in that spirit, let us remember something said by the Soviet cosmonaut Yuri Gagarin. His ride into space aboard Vostok 1 seemed devastating to many Americans in 1961. But today, with the passage of time, we can look back and see how much all of the astronauts and cosmonauts had in common. We can see what united them and not what divided us. Gagarin said, tomorrow, settlements on the moon, voyages to Mars, contact with other civilizations, let us not grieve that we shall not participate ourselves. We shall not envy the people of the future. Of course, they are lucky, and things about which we can only dream will be ordinary for them. But great happiness has come our way too, the happiness of the first steps in space. Let those who follow us envy this, our happiness. Ladies and gentlemen, Neil Armstrong, the first to plant his foot on the surface of the moon, has been a pioneer in many ways. And Mr. Armstrong, in asking you to come to the podium, may I say that millions of Americans have admired you not only for your achievement, but for the quiet dignity with which you have conducted yourself and represented not only our country, but humankind. Ladies and gentlemen, Neil Armstrong.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President, Mr. President, members of Congress, fellow astronauts, ladies and gentlemen. Wilbur Wright once noted that the only bird that could talk was the parrot, and he didn't fly very well. So I'll be brief. This week, America has been recalling the Apollo program and reliving the memories of those times in which so many of us here, colleagues here in the first rows, were immersed. Our old astrogeology mentor, Gene Shumate, even called in one of his comets to mark the occasion with spectacular Jovian fireworks. And reminding us once again of the power and consequence of celestial extracurricular activities. Many Americans were part of Apollo. About one or two in each 1,000 citizens all across the country. They were asked by their country to do the impossible, to envisage, to design, and to build a method of breaking the bonds of Earth's gravity, and then sally forth and visit another heavenly body. The principal elements, leaving Earth, navigating in space, and descending to a planet unencumbered with runways and traffic controls, would include the major requirements necessary for a spacefaring people. Today, a space shuttle flies overhead with an international crew. A number of countries have international space programs. During the space age, we have increased the knowledge of our universe 1,000-fold. Today we have with us a group of students among America's best. To you we say, we have only completed a beginning. We leave you much that is undone. There are great ideas undiscovered, breakthroughs available to those who can remove one of truth's protective layers. There are places to go beyond belief. Those challenges are yours. In many fields, not the least of which is space, because there lies human destiny.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Vice President. The members of Congress, the veterans of the Apollo program, the friends of the space program in America, and most of all, to those whom we honor here today. Just a day before he died, President Kennedy compared our space program to a boy who comes upon a wall in an orchard. The wall is tall, it looks insurmountable, but the boy is curious about what lies on the other side. So he throws his cap over the wall, and then he has no choice but to go after it. Well, 25 years ago today, our nation, represented by these three brave men, made that climb. And so today we are gathered to celebrate their voyage, and I honestly hope to recommit ourselves to their spirit of discovery. Apollo 11, Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, and Michael Collins were our guides for the wondrous, the unimaginable at that time. The true handiwork of God. They realized the dreams of a nation. They fulfilled an American destiny. They taught us that nothing is impossible if we set our sights high enough. Today, we're honored to have them and all the other Apollo astronauts who are here with us. For every American who followed your journey, especially for those of us who were young on that fateful day 25 years ago, and for the young Americans who still dream dreams of a future in space, we thank you all. Looking back on that mission, one thing is clear that we ought to remember today. It wasn't easy. The ship to the heavens measured just 13 feet in diameter. The destination was 3 days and a world away. On the third day, as the tiny module descended to the moon, it came dangerously close to a crash landing. That happens around here all the time. But Neil Armstrong took over the controls from the computer and landed safely. Man had not been rendered obsolete by the mechanical, and that hasn't happened yet. Not long after that, when he stepped on the moon, Mr. Armstrong marked the outer limit of the human experiment with those simple words, one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. These men and the other astronauts who came before and after have helped us to step into another world right here on Earth. They've shown us that we can harness the technology of space in areas from the economy to the environment to education, the information and technology, the products and knowledge that grew out of our space missions has changed our way of life forever and for the better. And in our quest, we have relearned a sense of confidence that has always been an essential ingredient of our American dream. Today, that journey continues. Our commitment to the space program is strong and unwavering. The best way to honor these men and all the others who have helped us so much is to continue that quest. Many have risked their lives and some have given their lives so that we could go forward. Today I ask that we remember especially the crews of Apollo 1 and the Challenger. On this day of celebration, we must never forget the deep debt we owe to those brave Americans. And our thoughts should also be with their families and their loved ones, for the sacrifice they have given helped to bring us all to new horizons. Our space explorations today are important models for cooperation in the new post-Cold War world. The Vice President described that eloquently a moment ago. Sergei's mission was an important first step toward full Russian partnership in what must be our next great mission, the International Space Station. This permanent orbiting space laboratory, to be built with help from 14 nations, will hasten discoveries in fields from the environment to medicine to computers. We should also remember that the space station holds great promise for us here at home, as it strengthens our largest export sector, aerospace technology. All these reasons explain why the House has fully funded already the space station. I want to thank many people who are responsible for that bipartisan victory, but let me mention especially George Brown, Lou Stokes, Bob Walker, and Jerry Lewis. I know the Vice President and Dan Golden and a lot of other people burned up the phone lines before the House vote. Let me say that we fought a lot of battles for the future around here in the last 18 months, and sometimes it seems that the most important ones are decided by the narrowest of margins. The economic plan passed by a vote, the assault weapons ban passed by two votes. Last year, the space station survived by the vote of a single member of the House of Representatives who changed his mind on the way down the aisle. But this year, thanks to the common endeavors of all of us, and thanks to the promise of cooperation with Russia and with other nations, the House of Representatives voted to fund the space station by 122 votes, a bipartisan commitment to America's future. I thank the members of the Senate who are here today, who are pushing for a passage, and I know they won't miss this great opportunity, which is coming on them very soon. And I thank you, Senator Mikulski, and all the other members of the Senate who are here, for the work that will be done in the Senate. As we work toward building a better world, we also have to preserve the one we've got here. William Anders of the Apollo 8 was the first to see the entire Earth at a glance. He said it looked like a fragile little Christmas tree ornament against an infinite backdrop of space, the only color in the whole universe we could see. It seemed so very finite. Well, because we are so very finite, our responsibility to our planet must not be limited. That's why NASA's mission to planet Earth is also a very important part of our future in space. We have to continue to monitor the global environment from space and to act on what we learn. Above all, let us never forget that all this work is about renewing our hopes and the hopes of generations to come, about the ability of Americans and the ability of human beings everywhere to conquer the seemingly impossible. I don't think anybody can look at the faces of these young people here with us today, and we ought to take a little while and look at them and welcome them here, without seeing again in their eyes dreams that those of us who are older could not have dreamed. The explorations we continue in space are clear evidence to them that they will grow up in exciting times without limits, times that demand their imagination, their vision, their courage, times that will reward them too for believing in themselves and their possibilities. One of our young astronauts, 13-year-old Wayne Gusman from New Orleans, sees a future where being an astronaut will be like, and I quote, driving a car. Everyone will do it. That's a great dream. But that and our other dreams are clearly the natural extensions of the space program which began a generation ago, the direct descendants of the dreams of the three men we are here to honor today. We can get there. No one who was alive then will ever forget where they were as Michael Collins traveled this solitary vigil around the moon, and Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin landed that tiny craft on the surface. The world was captivated not only by the risk and the daring, although they were risking and daring. They were captivated because the landing meant again that the human experiment in conquering new and uncharted worlds was reborn. In that sense, it was not an end, but a beginning. So to you, gentlemen, we say for your valor, your courage, your pioneering spirit, and for being here today to remind us again that all things are possible, we are deeply in your debt. Thank you very much.